Okay, Brishut, first of all, Rabbanim, Rabbi Sonnenberg, Rabbi Mann, other speakers, members of the Beit Midrash and the Kala Kadosh Hazeh. First of all, a special thank you to Serena and David Kashitsky for dedicating the entire War and Peace in Tanakh event. We very, very much appreciate the opportunity, and it's dedicated memory of Riva Kashitsky, Yifarnali Bracha, may her neshama have an aliyah. As well, for this particular shir, I'd like to thank Robbie and Brian Schwartz, who have dedicated this shir to commemorate the yahrzeit of Brian's father, Frank Schwartz, Ephraim ben Noach Zal. May the neshamos have aliyos as part of the Torah learning from this program. And really, very, very much thank you for allowing us to learn Torah together. It's nice to be back. I'm not sure the last couple of years that I've been able to make it, but it's great to be back up here and to see so many familiar faces from across the GTHA. In the case of the Hamiltonians, we have with us. So, I thought I would start off with the following. Being that this is a Tanakh shir, I wanted to look a little bit around Tanakh first, just to see themes of peace. And both in terms of what's going on right now in the world and in Israel, as well as just in general, our attitudes towards peace. We do have varying attitudes throughout not only Chazal, but throughout Tanakh. And this is, of course, Tanakh in a day. So let's start with a pasuk in Yeshaya, something that's very, very much on our minds right now. There's actually two pasukim in Yeshaya that are almost identical. And they tell us, Ein Shalom, there is no peace, Amar Elokai L'Arashayim. That's source number one on your source sheets. There is no peace, says God, to the wicked, to the evil people. Okay, we don't believe in peace when it comes to wicked people, on the one hand. On the other hand, we know a pasuk that we recite on a fairly regular basis, Derecheha Darchei Noam, the Torah's ways are pleasant ways. V'chol Nitivoteha Shalom, and all of its paths are peace. Everything about the Torah stands for peace. And again, many, many Ma'amarei Chazal, many, many statements that are found in the Talmud, that are found in the Midrashim, that tell us peace is of utmost importance, peace is critical, everything needs to be peaceful. On the other hand, we've got many, many statements like that first one, that the wicked have no peace. The wicked should have no peace. And the truth is, the only way truly to reconcile the absolutely no peace versus the yes peace, always peace, is in one of two ways. One way that I'd like to frame right now is, does the word shalom always mean peace in terms of a peace treaty? The answer to that question is clearly no. There are times where shalom means rest. There are times when shalom means peace from being chased after or other things. And it's a form of bracha. There are times when shalom actually means a peace treaty, like you heard about with Rabbi Grauer and like we're going to continue to discuss. And the second way is to find out, of course, that we read in Kohelet, and I think this is the ultimate synthesis, et le'ahov ve'et lisno, et milchama ve'et shalom. There's a time for this, and there's a time for that. Sometimes it's a time for peace. Sometimes the time, the circumstances, the situation calls for milchama, calls for battle, calls for war, calls for something less peaceful. And the goal of this shir, with that framing, is to explore, from the Torah's perspective, and primarily through a speech that Yiftach gives to the Melech B'nei Amon, the king of the children of Amon, what exactly are the parameters in which we offer peace? Now, as I came up, following Rabbi Grauer's shir, said there was a great introduction for you. No, I realize that some of the foundational work will build upon what Rabbi Grauer has said. I also acknowledge that not everyone is necessarily here from one shir to the other. So for those of you who were here and there's some repetition, I apologize in advance. For those of you who are not here, you missed a great shir on this topic. And I hope you can glean as much from this as well as from the source packet on the topic. So let's start with the critical passage that Rabbi Grauer brought, which is, again, just the Psokim in Devarim. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read through a couple of these passages very quickly just to get the broader picture. And then we're going to use primarily the commentary of the Ramban to give us those specifics as to how we know from a Tanakh perspective when is peace appropriate, when should peace be offered, and when should peace be shunned. So the Torah tells us, this is source number four. You can find it both with the Hebrew text from the Torah as well as an English translation. When you come near a city to battle against it, you shall first call out, peace. And if they answer you in peace, okay, and they open to you, all of the nation found in it will be, again, tributary, and they will serve you. However, but if they do not make peace with you, and they instead choose to battle, then you can besiege it, and God will give it into your hand, and you will wipe out every male by the edge of the sword. Everything else becomes loot. You can loot it. And you should have no problem taking from said loot. Again, there were certain battles where this was not the case, and we'll see whether this refers to all battles or not, but so far these are the rules of battle. Kein ta'asel chol ha'arim. So shall you do in all the cities that are very far away from you, asher lo me'arei ha'goyim ha'elahina, which are not from the cities of these nations. And what should happen? So the Torah is telling us, these are the rules under some circumstances, then there are other rules under other circumstances. Rak me'arei ha'amim ha'elah, from these, the cities of these nations, asher Hashem lokech ha'notin lecha nachala, those which Hashem is giving over to you as an inheritance, lo techayek al neshama, you don't let anyone live. And it continues, you shall destroy them, the Chiti, the Mori, the Knani, the Prizi, the Chivi, the Yibusi, as Hashem has commanded you, in order that you not learn, says the Torah, to do as they do to their gods, to basically worship Avodah Zarah. And then there's a further, I just brought you one more pasuk, the rules of siege that are also stated here. Okay, so this is the first paragraph. It does seem that we're talking about, again, there are two separate circumstances when we engage in war as to the rules of battle. There is one set of circumstances, possibly or not possibly the only one that includes offering peace, but you offer peace, and again, if they decide to fight and do not accept your peace, then you kill the males and everything else that everyone else can live. On the other hand, we have another situation where when it refers to Arei Ha'amim Ha'ele, the cities of these nations, meaning the seven nations which Hashem has commanded us to kick out of Eretz Yisrael, of Eretz Canaan, and we are supposed to take over their land, those ones, lo techayek al neshama, you don't leave anybody alive. And it's not clear, as Rabbi Grauer mentioned, there's a machloket as to whether or not we call peace to them as well, but we'll get back to that in a little bit. The second important paragraph that I'd like to discuss is a very interesting paragraph that is very relevant to the story that we're going to focus on of Yiftach. Okay, the second, and it's in source number 5 on your source sheets in the packets during the 11 o'clock shir. The Torah tells us as follows, Lo yavo amonia moavivi kal Hashem, no Ammonite or Moabite shall enter into the assembly, the community of Hashem, gam dora sirila yavo lahem bikal Hashem ad olam, even a tenth generation. Okay, someone's converted and they've waited and waited and there's barely any memory of Ammon and Moab. There's no such thing as converting, there's no such thing as marrying in. Again, what exactly this means, I'm talking about on a pshat level. What it means on a halachic level is a separate discussion, but we don't accept these people bikal Hashem. Okay, we don't, whether it means marry, whether it means convert, whatever it means. Why? What did they do that is so bad? What did they do that is so terrible that we cannot let them be bikal Hashem? Al devar asher lo kidmu etchem alechem uvamayim baderach mitzitchem imitzrayim. First of all, they didn't offer bread and water on your way out of Egypt. Not so bad, but worse. Vasher sachar alachat Bilam ben Beor. But then they hired Bilam, the son of Beor, mi Petor Aram Naharaim, from this place called Petor and Aram Naharaim, lekalalekat, to curse you. We know the Bilam story is a terrible, terrible saga, where really the kingdom of Balak, of Ammon and Moab, got together, Ziknei Moab, Ziknei Midian, and they hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people, which was then followed by all sorts of other tricks. And that was really, really bad, says the Torah. Therefore, no allowing them into the Jewish people. Thank God, however, says the Torah. However, Hashem loves you, as you can see in the text, and therefore he turned Bilam's curse into a blessing. However, says the Torah, here some very strong and very important words. Lo tidrosh shlomam v'tovatam kol yamecha leolam. you shall not, I'm reading the translation here, you shall not seek their peace or their prosperity all your days forever. What the Torah seems to be saying on the simplest of levels is, Ammon and Moab, after these events, have lost the ability to make peace with the Jewish people. Lo tidrosh shlomam. Now, there are other ways to interpret it. As we said earlier, the word shalom, and I said something to keep in mind, the word shalom does not always mean peace. What could it mean to say shalom to someone? Don't greet them, don't be nice to them, don't look out for them. So it's not absolute, but on a simple level, and we'll see this being a concern, it says you may not make peace with Ammon and Moab, with these nations. And we continue. One more opposite, and we're going to see the Ramban later discusses this in great detail. If we look at actually the Jews' journey, okay, we can see it a little bit in Bamidbar, we see it repeated in Devarim, but what's very interesting is we see in Devarim when Moshe retells the journey towards Eretz Canaan as they're getting here, as they're getting there before Moshe ultimately passes away before they enter Eretz Canaan, Moshe is told, "V'karavtamu b'nei Ammon, al titzureim v'al titgorbam." Don't bother them and don't contend with them. Why? Ki lo etein me'eretz b'nei Ammon l'cha Yerusha. Hashem tells the B'nai Yisrael, "I'm not going to give you their land. Don't start up with them. That one's not going to happen." Ki livnei Lot netatei Yerusha. This is for the children of Lot, who of course were Ammon and Moab. After the infamous story, after the escape from Sodom, that's when Ammon and Moab are born. And therefore, says Hashem, this is for Lot. That stuff over there in Eretz Canaan is for you. You don't start up with them. So we've now got a bit of a confusion. On the one hand, we've got separate text about how to act in battle, which itself is ambiguous. Again, as Rabbi Greer mentioned, we don't know if we are supposed to offer peace to the seven nations or not. Now we get to Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab presumably are not part of the seven nations. They're not part of that list in the Pasuk. So you would think that according to everybody, you do offer peace to them. Then we're told, Lo tidrosh shlomam v'tovatam, never make peace with them. And on the other hand, we're also told that al titzureim v'al titkorbam, don't start up with them, which means basically you have to have peace with them. So it's very confusing. What is going on with Ammon and Moab? And in particular, let's take a look at a story later in Tanakh, although there are two of these, which we'll see referenced by the Ramban. But there are two stories, and we'll focus on the story of Yiftach. Yiftach's diplomacy with the king of Bnei Ammon, what he tells him, and what the ultimate outcome is, and how that might be squared with the laws of war and peace, and more importantly, whether or not we can come up with a more precise definition as to when one should offer peace, when a nation should not offer peace, can we come to that conclusion? Now, here's the story in Shoftim. Vayishlach Yiftach malachim el melech b'nei Ammon lemor. Yiftach sends messengers to the king of the b'nei Ammon. Maliv alach. What are you doing here? Kivata ilay lilachem baratzi, that you're coming to wage war against my land. Vayomer melech b'nei Ammon malachim Yiftach. So the king of Ammon says to the messengers, go back and tell Yiftach the following. Ki lakach Yisrael et artzi balotomi mitzrayim. A little bit of history here. Says the Melech Bnei Ammon, I'm going to educate you. Ammon used to be a very large area. Okay, very, very large area. Much larger than it is today. Some 300-400 years ago, we had a very large kingdom. Unfortunately, part of it was captured. And then, when Bnei Yisrael, as we're going to see in this story, tried to pass through Sichon, Sichon was captured, and all of the land there that was once Ammon's was also captured along with it. But here's the story that the Melech Bnei Ammon tells. They took all my land from Arnon to Yabok to Yarden. V'ata hashiva etan b'shalom. Says the king of Ammon, I need you to give me back my land, which you took. I was the original owner of this land. V'yosef od Yiftach. Yiftach is not very happy with this. Vayishlach malachim al melech bnei Ammon. He sends a second set of messengers. Vayomer lo komar Yiftach. Here's what the messengers say to the king of Ammon. This is what Yiftach says. Lo lakach Yisrael et eretz Moab et eretz bnei Ammon. That's not true. We didn't take your land. Ki balotam Yisrael. When the Jewish people came out of Egypt. Vayelach Yisrael v'amidbar ad Yamsuf ayavo kadesha. They traveled fast through the Yamsuf to Kadesh. And then, Vayishlach Yisrael malachim al melech Edom. First they send messengers to the king of Edom, Lamor, saying, Ebrana ve'artzecha, can we please pass through? And again, this is recorded in the Torah in very similar words. Yiftach is simply taking a quote from earlier in Tanakh. V'lo shama melech Edom, and the king of Edom said, no, we're not letting you through, sorry. V'gam el melech Moav shalach v'lo ava. And they also sent, saying, please, Moabites, can we please pass through your land? And Moab said, no. Therefore, what did the Jewish people do? Vayeshuv Yisrael b'Kadesh. Vayelech b'Midbar v'yasov et Eretz Edom et Eretz Moav. Then they went all the way around the kingdom of Moab, the kingdom of Edom. And what happened? Vayavom Yisrael Shemesh Eretz Moab, vayachanun be'ever Arnon, v'lo ba'u b'gvul Moav, ki Arnon gvul Moav. Says, Yiftach, here's what happened. We never entered Moab and Ammon proper. We didn't enter. You didn't give us permission to pass. We didn't pass. We went all the way around. Now we get to Sichon. Okay? Vayishach Yisrael Malachim al Sichon Melech Amorim Melech Heshbon. Vayar Melo Yisrael Nabranav Eretzachad Mekomi. They said, excuse me, Sichon, can we please pass through your land? Sichon was even less nice than Edom and then Moab, because what does Sichon do? V'lo Amin Sichon Yisrael Avor Big V'lo. Sichon didn't let them pass, and what did he do? Vayasov Sichon et Cholamo Vayachnu B'yatza Vayilachem im Yisrael. Sichon actually declares war on the Jewish people, says you are not passing through. Not only that, I'm coming out to declare war against you. They battle, and what happens is Vayitein Hashem Elokei Yisrael Sichon et Cholamo B'yad Yisrael Vayakum Vayirash Yisrael et Kol Eretz HaMoreh Yoshev Eretz Ahi. And then, says Yiftach, they actually captured in that battle with Sichon the entire land of the Emori, which included Me'arnon, Vadayabok, Mimin HaMidbar, Ad HaYarden, and says in Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23, and we'll read the English from here just to quickly move through so we can get to the sort of the meat of the Shir. So now Hashem, the God of Israel, has dispossessed the Amorites from before his people Israel. Again, we're in 23 in source number 7 in Shoftim. And should you possess them, won't you possess that which Kemosh your God gives you to possess? And whoever Hashem, our God, has dispossessed from before us, then we will possess. He says, this was land that we captured, that God gave us when we were on our way out of Egypt. We didn't want this fight. We didn't pick this fight. They came out against us. We captured this land. This is not your land. Now, and he says to him, he gives him some Musar. Now, are you any better than Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab? Did he ever strive against Israel? Did he ever fight against them? Did Balak actually wage a war? No, Balak never waged a war. He hired Bilam pretty bad. Balak never waged a war. When Israel lived in Cheshbon and his towns, and it's Aroer and his towns, and in all the cities that are along the side of Arnon, which again, the king of Ammon is saying is ours, 300 years. Why didn't you recover them at that time? You've had 300 years where we've been sinning here. Don't bother us. We captured this legally. And please, I therefore have not sinned against you, but you do me wrong to battle against me. May Hashem, the judge, be judged this day between the children of Israel and the children of Ammon. However, the king of the children of Ammon didn't listen to the words of Yiftach, which he sent to him. So Yiftach sent him this long history lesson. Melech Bnei Ammon is not very good at history, clearly. And he doesn't accept it. And Yiftach says, what are you doing? May Hashem judge you for what you're doing today. And the king of the Bnei Ammon does not listen. So now, the critical question that I'm going to deal with, and again, and thereby attempt to come up with the definition of when peace should be offered, is as follows. How was Yiftach allowed to offer peace here? So the first question is, did Yiftach actually offer peace here? What was Yiftach doing when he sent this? Okay? On the one hand, okay, the king of Bnei Ammon comes forward and says, I'm not necessarily interested in battle. I just want you to give over all these cities which were ours. That's maybe the king of Ammon calling for peace prior to battle, but no battle has started yet. Okay? And number two, it's always possible. It's hard to get a sense from the words. You have some things that make it sound one way, right? The king of the children of Ammon didn't listen to the words of Yiftach. That makes it sound like Yiftach saying, hold off. If you don't take our land, we'll stay at peace with you. Everyone will be happy. On the other hand, perhaps what Yiftach is doing is ranting at him, saying, what are you coming to fight us for? Again, like we said, Musar. Yiftach, perhaps, some would say, is not actually offering peace. He's saying, Yishpot, right? The Hebrew words. Okay? Yishpot Hashem HaShofet Hayom Bein Bnei Yisrael Vein Bnei Ammon. How dare you come attack us? You're going to get it. Okay? Meaning Yiftach was not going forward to offer peace necessarily. So, let's think of, based on the Rabban, was this a situation where we allowed to offer peace or no? So first of all, back in Devarim 23, which is the section where it says, Lo tidrosh lamam v'tovatam, that one may never offer peace to Ammon and Moab, Rashi tells us, you know what Lo tidrosh lamam v'tovatam is? You don't have the obligation to treat their slaves nicely. Lo tidrosh lamam v'tovatam has nothing to do with battle, has nothing to do with war. Lo tidrosh lamam v'tovatam means there are certain rules that relate to slaves. Slaves from Ammon and Moab, they get the short end of the stick. Ramban quotes this in source number 8. You can see it in the beginning. He says this comes from the Sifri. And he says, what's very fascinating is that Rashi only quotes the first half of this Midrash in the Sifri. The second half of the Midrash in the Sifri says, what does Lo tidrosh lamam mean? It actually refers back to source number 4. Even though you have an obligation always to offer peace, Lo tidrosh lamam means you never offer peace to Ammon and Moab. If this is the case, does Yiftach have the ability to offer peace according to Halacha, according to the Torah, to Melech B'nei Ammon? The answer is no. Ramban would therefore have to say that what Yiftach did is not offering peace. However, Ramban goes further. So point number one is, which nations are we allowed to offer peace to? Ramban tells us we may not offer peace to Ammon and Moab. As we heard again from the last year, the Rambam and the Ramban himself, we'll see in a later source, say that we do offer peace to literally every other nation, even the Shiva Amim, even the seven nations of Canaan, contra Rashi, who tells us that no, we do not offer peace to the seven nations and Amalek. So criterion number one is who? Who are we dealing with? Again, according to Ramban, which is the commentary we're working with over here, we offer peace to every single nation other than Ammon and Moab. Now, Ramban has a very interesting take, and he continues in the middle of source number 8, and he says, Vanir Eli, it seems to me, Ki milchemet Ammonu Moab asra katuv aleinu ledorot. He says, but you know what? You can't make peace with Ammon and Moab, but on the other hand, he says, we had another pasuk. He says he believes that there is a constant mitzvah on all generations to not wage war against them. V'akatuv she'amar al titkaruvam. Eina mitzvah l'sha'ab bilvad, says Ramban. That pasuk that we read, don't bother Ammon and Moab, is actually, says, a continuing one of the 613 mitzvos. There's a mitzvah to not wage war against Ammon and Moab. So what's going on? Okay? How can we simultaneously have a mitzvah, you may not attack them, and also have a mitzvah, you may not make peace with them? So what exactly state should we be in, Ramban? And here's where the Ramban makes a critical, critical distinction. And he says, the second part of our definition for when you may make peace is geography. It's not just about who, it's also about where. And says Ramban, and you can read it inside, I know we're getting close to about 5 minutes left or so, says the Ramban, so listen, Im Kain, okay, we're the third line of the Ramban in source number 8 on the second paragraph, okay? You can read it also in the English. If so, okay? Hakatuv Shiamar, the verse which states, Lo tidrosh shlomam, where does it say you can't make peace? Yitzaveh in nilcham aleihem be'ir shekavshu heim min ha'amim. Shelo nikra lahem l'shalom. Says the Ramban, you know where we say, Lo tidrosh shlomam, that there is no peace allowed with Ammon and Moab? It's only in a city that they have conquered that was not originally theirs. Says the Ramban, again, criterion number 2 for peace is not just who, it's where. To actually go into proper Ammon and Moab and fight them? Not allowed. Al titkaruvam, ki livnei lot netatei yerusha. That is their land forever. But were they to capture somewhere else? As we know that they did. They had military campaigns since they had their original land, and they captured other lands. That, says Ramban, is where we have Lo tidrosh lamam v'tovatam. You cannot offer them peace under their battles. And listen to what he says. Shalom nikra lahem l'shalom again. Be'ir shekavshu heim min ha'amim. V'chein im yavo heim lilachem bi'artzenu. And so too, if they come to attack in Israel proper, they come to take our land, no peace. Again, not just who, but where. So says the Ramban, okay, where do we say that, again, we do wage war against Ammon and Moab? Either something that was not initially indigenous to Ammon and Moab, shall we say, or if they come, of course, to Eretz Yisrael. Now, this, again, will mean that he still has to reinterpret Yiftach, and he does. He tells us. He says, so what should we do? Again, mutar lanu ledof achareihem, we can chase them down, v'lichvosh behem hamadinot, we can capture their countries, lehakotush ve'arim she'asu imanu hara, we can attack them, v'hosh asa Yiftach. And he says, Yiftach attacked them. Presumably, Ramban will say this whole discussion of Yiftach is saying, bad move, Ammon and Moab. We didn't attack you before, you know why? Because that was yours. God said not to attack you. Now that you've started up with us, you're in trouble. All of those other nations around that were not part of your original territory, you're now in trouble for. And that's what it meant when Yiftach was sending. He was not offering peace. Chas v'chalila, says the Ramban. Lo tidrosh laman v'tovatam. It's a prohibition. Rather that. That's criterion number two. And we'll finish now with criterion number three. What's very interesting is, the Ramban, if you look back at the Ramban in Tvarim, and we won't have time to go through this in depth, I'm just going to jump to the very last paragraph in the source packet, in the source sheet for my shir. V'nir'esh she'yesh hefresh od b'she'elat ha'shalom. Again, it's the very last in source number nine. There's one more difference when you request these. She'be'arim ha'rechokot. When it comes to the far-off cities, nish'al lahem l'shalom v'she'yu lanu l'mas v'yavdunu. When it comes to the faraway cities, those ones, again, we tell them, you need to serve us. However, aval bi'arei ha'amim ha'eleh, nish'al lahem l'shalom, u'masim v'avdut, when do we offer peace to the seven nations? Al minat she'ikablu aleihem shelo la'avod avodah zarah. Says the Ramban, and again, this may be a little bit different than the Rambam, but says the Ramban, the third thing is, what are the terms of the treaty? Depending on where, and depending on who, we actually have different terms in order for peace. Going back to the original, just to summarize, if you look back at the original section in the Torah that talks about Ki Tigrav al Ir Lilachem Aleha, okay, when you get close to a city, you will notice these three parts of it. On the one hand, very clearly, like we thought coming in, there's a difference between who. Me'areha mima'ela, the Torah is very, very clear. Again, in source number four, you can read it with the magnifying glass, and you'll see each of these criteria come forward. Number one, again, there's a clear delineation between some nations and other nations in the Torah. Between Ammon and Moab and other nations. Between the seven nations and other nations. Between Amalek and other nations. That may be one criterion for making peace. Some yes, some no. Number two, if you look at the entire section of the Torah, it's always speaking of geography. Ki tikrav el ir, me'areha amim ha'ela. And therefore, there may be differences where the different nations are located. Are they located in Eretz Yisrael? Then there may not be peace. That's our land. When they're located elsewhere, there may be peace. Okay? And finally, number three, the terms of the peace. Sometimes the peace that's being offered is more of basically surrender. Right? The way the Torah is talking about it, karate el shalom, basically means, would you like to surrender? That type of peace, I think people might be okay with in Gaza today. If everyone surrenders and everyone, right? You put up the white flag, that's maybe a peace that's manageable. Peace doesn't always mean the same thing like we said at the beginning. But ultimately, the way we end off is, you have to consider each of these three criteria. The who, the where, and the terms, in order to properly understand what Tanakh peace should look like. And through that, you can actually go through all of the different cases where peace is offered, and hopefully put together a wholesome picture which fits in with all of the Torah and Tanakh to make a beautiful, nuanced view of peace. It's not just everything. V'chol netivoteha shalom means we always have the right balance of peace, along with Ein shalom amar lo kailo shayim. Thank you so much.